You're listening to Talking Heads. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. This hour on the programme, we're continuing our coverage of the build-up to the general election in September, brought to you by PDMS, this coverage. We're joined in the studio now by candidate for Michael, Alf Cannon. Good afternoon, Alf, and thanks for joining us on Talking Heads.
Good afternoon, Stu.
We've not met before, but I suppose the elephant in the room, the obvious question is that really you're carrying on the family business, aren't you?
Well, as I said to John Moss when I spoke to him last month, there has been a long tradition of family involvement in public service, stretching back to my great-grandfather. And yes, in many ways, there is an element of family tradition. However, from my own perspective, I feel the time is right to put myself forward now for public election. I've been on the island for 20 years, out of the last 30. I've got experience in the UK and international experience. I've run two businesses. I'm currently on my second. And I feel that I'm at a stage in my life at 43 where I can now enter the fray, stand up and represent people and hopefully make a difference. The island obviously is facing a huge number of challenges in many facets of its life. Obviously, the most important one is the state of the economy. I believe that my experience and knowledge will be able to contribute to that and hopefully make a successful difference. For many people at the moment and from all the doorsteps that I'm knocking on, the main topic of conversation is the state of the economy and what government is going to have to do. And I hope that I will be able to assist in formulating the right plans and helping to drive those forward.
If you look at the economy objectively, you would say that the economy is in a pretty strong position. The only problem that we've got is that we've lost all this VAT, haven't we?
Well, I have to disagree with you there, Stu. I think that when you lose 40% of your revenues, and £175 million is a lot of money, then you know that it does expose a number of potential weaknesses. And obviously, I mean, the most obvious thing to look at is government expenditure and the way that public finances are being spent. Now, that will have to change. There's no question that there will have to be some fundamental changes to the services that people receive. And also, we're going to have to look at how the other services are going to be paid for. And you've got to balance that also with very troubling economic times globally. Now, the Isle of Man can't obviously influence global economics, but what it can do is position itself and develop the strategic plans to drive itself forward and to develop business in the best way that it sees fit.
So your comment at the moment then about the state of the economy is based on what? The fact that we've had it good for too long and not really taken full advantage of it? Because certainly if you compare us with our neighbours either side, in Ireland or in the UK, we're doing an awful lot better than they are, aren't we?
Well, absolutely. But you've got to remember that Ireland and the UK and other international countries have much more flexibility around their finances in that they can borrow substantial sums.
Isn't it good that we can't, though?
Well, it is. But that therefore means that from our own perspective, that when you lose that sort of sum of money from your revenue, then it is going to directly impact on people's lives. Now, my worry is, if I just go back to my earlier point, I mean, I think I was talking about the global economic situation, but then when you reflect that in the private sector here, there doesn't seem to me to have been a huge amount of growth. Now, I'm in the recruitment business, and I can see daily the demand levels coming from the private sector for staff, and I can categorically say to you that as far as permanent staff recruitment goes, it has significantly dropped away from where it was 3 years ago. And in fact, you only need to look at the news over the last sort of week, 10 days, to realise that people are losing their jobs. Yes. Credit Suisse, Bet 188, Pro Tours, you know, and this has been a sort of ongoing saga. May not always have been reported, but I, you know, over the last 2 years, there are numbers of companies out there who have downsized or reduced their staff levels. And of course, you know, you keep getting the news today, the international news, HSBC 10,000, Barclays today, thousands of jobs. You know, what's going to be the impact and the knock-on impact on the Isle of Man? And, you know, you have to say these are very, very worrying times. So we've got to be very, very clear in working towards, you know, growing the private sector, diversifying the business, the sectors of business that we have available, and ensuring that, you know, we can maintain a balanced and effective economy going forward.
And how do we do that? Because it's an easy thing to say that we need to diversify and grow the economy. How do we do that? Because there's a huge amount of competition, isn't there, out there?
Very much so. I mean, I obviously one of the key things is for any prospective politician, it's quite easy to give, you know, government a good kicking, but then to come up and then present alternatives can be very challenging. Particularly, I mean, one of the things that I have struggled with, obviously, is formulating effective figures, because you don't always have the facts and information to hand. But I have a sort of identified four or five clear areas that I think would help us. I think first of all, you've got to look internally. I've already stated, and I'll state very, very clearly in my manifesto, that I think one of the priorities for government is to carry out a comprehensive spending review, which should also include the local authority borrowing, and to look at how we can, you know, more effectively streamline our services. I think we need to revisit that scope and scale report into government and local authorities. And I think that we do need to be looking further forward for the public election of a chief minister. I think also we need to conduct a review of our constitutional relationships with the UK and Europe, with recommendations for beneficial improvements. And I think we also need to form a commission of income tax to assist in defining the way forward in that area. The other key point, obviously, is that the government has to recognise that the recovery will be driven by the private sector. You know, and as such, we've got to make every effort to support the private enterprise and to encourage and support entrepreneurs in
that. That's a bit too wishy-washy. I mean, that was my question. How are we going to do it? How are we going to improve
business? Government has
here?
To work very, very closely with the private sector on that.
It now, would say that it does.
Well, at the moment, we've got the Department of Economic Development. Now, actually, in terms of Jersey, they have Jersey Finance, which to me seems to serve as their model to go forward. Now, that is jointly funded between private enterprise and government. You know, they've hired, the people that are hired there are not government employees, but they've been brought in from the private sector and work for the benefit of the whole to drive Jersey forward. And Jersey have done, and nobody, I think, will be able to dispute this, a very, very good job in influencing and extending their influence into a number of spheres of influence internationally. You know, and they have offices in major countries around the world.
So Jersey Finance isn't funded by the taxpayer?
Well, part funded, yes, but also part funded by private funds.
All right. Well, we'll get on to all that a wee bit later about how you're going to change the world. Give us a bit of background, though, because I'm interested to see that you actually served in the army. You're a military man, aren't you, in part of your background?
Yes, that's right. I did 4 years. I did a year at Sandhurst and left as a commissioned officer, and then spent 3 years with the Royal Regiment of Wales, serving in a number of spheres around the world, in Northern Ireland and Hong Kong in particular.
See, that could be useful, really, in Timwell, couldn't it? Military experience, them all standing to order.
No, but I think the point is that actually, you know, I didn't go to university. My option was to join the army. I think, possibly questionably, but the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst has been renowned for producing leaders of the highest quality order. And many of those people who've been educated at the Royal Military Academy have gone on not only to serve extremely well in the army, but then to serve both in private industry and indeed, in fact, if you look in the current government, in the UK government, there's three or four examples of serving MPs who have done their time.
Before that, you went to King William's College, didn't you? So that was your sort of course in terms of education. Do you think that it gives you a good background for politics in the Isle of Man? A serious question. Do you think that it's helpful to you?
I think that basically, I mean, it's always nice to be educated on the island, for anybody to be educated on the island, to go away for a few years and then to come back and to contribute to society. And actually, that's really what we need to do more of is to try and get some more of our graduates back. I know there has been a bit of a push in recent years to do that, but it is one of the focuses that we need to think about. I mean, obviously, when you grow up somewhere, and live somewhere and it's your home and you appreciate everything that it's got to offer. And you've got to remember, Stu, that, you know, I've been away. I've seen the other side, if you like. Yeah. And I can tell you, you know, the grass isn't greener. The Island Man offers fantastic quality of life. It offers fantastic facilities. And, you know, for an environment in which to raise a family and live your lives and do your business, it's still, in my opinion, a cut above the rest. We've got to keep it that way.
As a committed stopover, I couldn't agree more, but I've got that perspective as well of seeing what it's like across and not wanting any part of it. So you think that that's important to get off the island and to just sort of broaden your horizons a wee bit?
Yes, I think so. I think that in some respects, you know, we could be accused, and I'm focusing here on government, of being it too insular at times, and that we don't spend enough time integrating ourselves in Europe and the UK. Well, one of the recommendations that I think is that as a job share or as part of somebody's responsibility, there's got to be a clear focus on international relations and building those international relations so that, you know, we can be in a position to react more effectively to bombshells that come our way or issues that come our way, such as the reciprocal health agreement, the VAT, European legislation.
Do you think we've been well served by our government? Because your father clearly doesn't. He said it's the worst government he can remember, I seem to remember.
I think the government have faced a number of difficult challenges. There's no question about that. However, from the outside looking in, which I have been doing over the last 5 years, it would seem to me that we've reacted rather like the sort of proverbial rabbit in the headlights, and that we haven't really formulated a clear plan or strategy to move forward.
Rather than proactive.
Well, we continue to live year by year, and this is one of the issues that I've also sort of passionately believe in, is that we've got to find a clearer direction to move forward in. I mean, at the moment, you know, everyone sits around eagerly awaiting the next budget announcement, basically to see whether we can retain and continue with our 0% tax regime. Now, obviously, next year the ARRI is going to be removed, and you know, there's therefore I think going to be question marks about whether that then will be seen by Europe as you know continue to be acceptable, maintaining it at 0%. And of course, removal of the ARRI would also mean another £2.5 million loss of government revenue.
It might well be though that the government has already got a contingency plan in place for that. We just don't know, do we?
Well, it may well be that they've got a contingency plan in place, but then again, it's going to be another announcement. Is that going to be a sustainable one for the next 2 or 3, 4, 5 years? Or is it just going to be another year in which we're going to have to work to balance things out? Now, you know, my view is that, yes, OK, 0% obviously has been built around the sort of mainstay of business going, you know, for the last 5, 6 years. But it has been, you know, a waiting game, and there's no clear evidence to suggest to me that actually in the long term this is going to be successful. And I do think this is where we need to be now careful, that we do need to be thinking in the medium to longer term, you know, for the Isle of Man rather than just the short term.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
This is Talking Heads, and our election candidate today is Alf Cannon, who's standing for the constituency of Michael in the September general election. You mentioned earlier on that you think that the incoming government needs to look at the whole sort of scope and the structure of the government. Does that mean to say that the public sector is going to have to face a lot of redundancies?
At the end of the day, we all know the public sector has got huge challenges. It'd be unwise for me to sit here and speculate about redundancies when the full facts of any spending review would implicate and suggest where potential savings could be made.
But that's the biggest expense to government, isn't it? Staff costs.
Well, that's correct. I think that the important thing is that if government sits down and does its planning correctly, cuts out a lot of the waste around that, then you can clearly see exactly whether that is going to impact directly on jobs.
Where do you think we're wasting money at the moment?
Well, I think there's a number of examples from the government accounts where you can see there are significant challenges. I think, you know, the buses for £6 million, the airport's costing us £6 million per annum, the steam railway and the electric railway, £3 million combined, £400,000 on the NSC, you know, and there are other examples as well. But, you know, all this has to be looked at. At the end of the day, money does not grow on trees, and we have to find solutions to many of these issues because, you know, We've almost got to look all the way down from the major capital projects down to the smallest bit of expenditure. Interestingly enough, on the radio the other day, Francis Maude was on, and he was saying that from a UK perspective, he was now signing off almost every bit of expenditure personally that was being put through his particular department. Now, that's the kind of responsibility and accountability that I think the new government are going to have to take. It is
and
no
don't
good.
Do you think that Tynwald already has that kind of scrutiny, that sort of oversight on spending?
Well, I think there's a number of examples where we clearly have failed on that oversight on expenditure. You know, one probably only needs to look at one of the biggest projects to take place in recent years, the IRIS. One needs to look at the MEA. I mean, let's take the MEA, for example. You know, When we've ended up there with a millstone around our neck, huge debts, and seemingly at the time, nobody actually seemed to be knowledgeable or knew anything about the amount of money that had been racked up. So, you know, no, I think in the past we have been guilty of failing to control expenditure. And I think now, and also the key point here is there's been no accountability. At the end of the day, ministers will have to take accountability for major over-expenditure and loss of income in their departments. And this therefore comes back to the question of control. Are ministers controlling their departments effectively and efficiently, and are they accountable? I think the public actually want people to stand up, hold their hands up, and admit responsibility when things go wrong. I think they'd have far greater respect for a politician who stood up and said, I'm sorry, this was wrong, this happened on my watch, we have significantly overspent here, or this project's gone wrong. I am therefore going to take this corrective action, or here's my resignation.
Well, I think to an extent we've got that already, haven't we? I'm thinking about the airport, the £2 million through the currency exchange thing that didn't happen properly. I think Minister Bell stood up and said, you know, this has happened on my watch. The person who's responsible has offered his resignation, and I've refused to accept it.
Well, that's one clear example. But there are many, many other examples, including the MEA, where that hasn't happened.
All right, let's talk a bit more about you then, because you're a director of your own recruitment firm now. What will happen to that if you're elected in September?
I will move away from my direct involvement in that business, and I will focus purely on politics.
So it's a full-time job for you if you're elected? Absolutely no question about that.
I will still remain a director of my company.
Right.
And I will be there on occasion for consultation, but I will not be actively involved in that business on a day-to-day basis. We have plans to put in a manager if I'm successful.
Okay, you're 43 years old. You're standing for the first time as far as politics is concerned. Did you ever consider maybe standing for a local authority, or was national politics always the thing that appealed to you most?
I think, and I've heard this many times, that really it should be a prerequisite or an ideal for an MHK to stand or to have served his time as a commissioner. Yes, I mean, I agree, in an ideal world, some involvement on a day-to-day basis in the local constituency would be perfect. For me personally, it's just never worked out like that. I've been busy building and running businesses, and also I've had huge other involvements in the local community, in particular on my sporting side. So actually having the time to also involve myself as a commissioner has not really been practical for me. But at the end of the day, I don't see it as a huge negative. I think that my background, military, banking, business, self-employed, you know, will bring forward the qualities that I need to be able to do this job if the electorate choose to elect me.
Three young children as well, haven't you? So that must keep you up at night.
Well, it does. I mean, interestingly enough, it's also one of those things that on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis, I can see the pressure that many families are under at the moment. Stu. You know, like everybody else, I do the weekly shopping on a Saturday or Sunday, and every time we go to the shop, it costs us more and more money. Now, yeah. I think actually that's a great benefit to me. It helps keep me in check with reality, and I understand not only both from the cost perspective, but from educational perspective, and from bringing up the children to be polite and well-behaved and disciplined as possible, the pressures that parents are under at the moment. And they are under huge pressure. I fully realise and understand that. And that is why, you know, if I'm elected, you know, I want to say to everybody that, you know, I'm very much on the working man's side here. I appreciate the pressures. But however, you know, I'm not going to shy away from making those tough decisions when necessary.
And would you be able to do that? I'm interested in the difference between being an MHK and looking after the constituency issues and being an MHK and looking after national issues, because there might sometimes be a conflict of interest, mightn't there? What's good for Michael might not be good for the Isle of Man.
I think, Stu, that you know, this has been raised quite a number of times, I think, if you look at various forums, letters, people's comments generally, you know, are MHKs there to serve their constituency or there to serve nationally? I think that various commentators actually don't give enough credit to the people. The people actually want their MHKs to serve them for the greater interest of the Isle of Man. And ultimately, that is the comments that I am getting door to door, day to day, as I speak to people and part of my canvassing.
But I'm just concerned about things like, I mean, in your manifesto on your website, you talk about things like renewable energy, and you say that you're very much in favour of green energy, but you wouldn't want a wind farm on the coasts in your constituency. I mean, that surely is that dichotomy, isn't it?
No, I think you'll find that I've said that I'm very much for renewable energy, but I'm against onshore wind farms, purely because, and that's in general, whether Michael or whether it's across the island, categorically, I will not be voting for an onshore wind farm.
Because?
Well, because I think, for a number of reasons. One, from sort of an environment perspective, I don't think that onshore wind farms particularly suit the environment and will go some way to possibly ruining fundamentally a part of the sort of green infrastructure, if you like, over here on the island. Secondly, from a cost perspective, I don't think anybody has come up with any clear evidence that wind farms currently are profitable. In the UK, they are heavily subsidised in a number of areas, and they are costing the taxpayer money. So that is why. Now, if you move that, take that onto the offshore side of things, I haven't said anywhere that I would be against offshore wind farms.
But they're more expensive, so even less cost efficient, surely.
No, you're correct. I mean, I will not be voting for any wind farms until there is clear evidence that actually it's sustainable for the Manx economy and that there are no huge public funds to be committed. I mean, at the end of the day, we can't afford it. But I recently read the UK roadmap to offshore and onshore wind, and the plans for the seas around us, both off the coast of Scotland and the coast of Ireland, and obviously the government will to some extent be aware of this, having been to the recent Anglo-Irish Council meeting and discuss this. You know, there are substantial UK plans to develop, you know, not just one, but many multiple wind farms offshore, which they hope will be able to generate enough electricity for the UK by 2020. Now, the Isle of Man will have a part to play in that, I very much hope. Given our physical location, we should be able to get our involvement. And also, my initial thinking is that, great, if we can use some of that offshore wind power that the UK government are developing to help assist us reach our targets, then that would be fantastic as well. But, you know, the Isle of Man by itself, I do not think, has the capital available at present to invest in these type of projects.
It's maybe a little bit presumptuous at this stage, because the first job is to get yourself elected in September. But if you are, how would you like the next 5 years to progress as far as your career within politics is concerned? Would you be happy to stay as a backbencher scrutinising the government? Or would you rather get in there, get your hands dirty, roll your sleeves up and get stuck into government?
Well, I think if I'm elected, as with any new job, there's always going to be a learning curve. And, you know, there are various nuances and areas of government that I would have to come to terms with. And I suspect that process may well take a few months. Having said that, you know, I want to make a difference. That's part of the remit for or the motivation for me standing. And therefore, some of that would depend on the new chief minister and the new government as to what they felt I could do and contribute. So very much, I'm not going to declare myself as a backbencher for a period of time. I want to be involved. I
would
like to serve
the new government.
So if you are elected
and the new chief minister says, we'd like you to join the Department of Agriculture as a political member, you'd be quite happy to do that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I want to contribute, Stu, and I see myself working with government. That doesn't mean to say that I would blindly follow government every time it came up with a new proposal or a new piece of legislation or a new policy. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, everybody is committed to serving the public, I presume, otherwise they wouldn't be standing. But it does come down to, you know, an individual is elected because the people are putting their trust in him or her for the 5-year period to contest and bring forward, you know, legislation, depending on which perspective they have, which is a benefit to the greater good of the Isle of Man. So if you're required to stand up and disassociate yourself or highlight problems or suggest alternatives, then you should be able to do that without fear or favour.
All right, we're completely out of time, but in 10 seconds, tell the people of Michael why they should vote for you in September.
I think I offer the people of Michael a varied background. I'm a Manxman. I have had various dealings both on the Isle of Man and internationally. I can read a balance sheet. I know commercially what's right. I also have had a clear understanding of the Isle of Man's position, and I would like to think that I'll be able to contribute to the people in finding a clear and concise way forward.
Alf Cannon, it's been lovely talking to you today, and no doubt we'll speak again before September. Thank you.